Yeah, I really want to talk about coherent structures in turbulence. This is a topic which apparently has not been come up yet in this program, and I think it's a very important topic when you deal with realistic turbulent systems. That means those which you observe in nature or which you encounter in engineering applications and so on. One has to be aware that turbulence is not just a statistical ensemble which can be described in terms of randomness, but that turbulence usually occurs in nature and in industry and other places as a transport process. And the homogeneous isotropic turbulence, which we like to deal with as theoreticians, does not provide transport. You have to do something more. And so realistic turbulent systems assume their simplest form when you have homogeneity in two spatial dimensions and in time, and but you need always a third dimension in order to have the direction of the transport in order to put energy into the system. And this type of systems, because they are transport systems, are characterized by finite correlations and by spontaneous coherent structures, as you will see. And throughout this talk, which I will present, thermal convection will be the primary topic. But I want to emphasize that what one can do theoretically there can be done in all systems which are homogeneous, say, in two spatial dimension and in time. And I encourage anybody who is interested in this type of research to look more into those systems and look at the higher bifurcations, because that's sort of an essence of my talk, that through the higher bifurcations we can learn something about coherent structures in turbulence. I must apologize that I'm presenting here a talk which is actually for a more general audience, not a special audience of experts like we are here. And so if some of these points which are made are a bit trivial, maybe you forgive me. I think this talk is still serves quite well to illustrate the importance of coherent structures. Now, this reasons why thermal convection is sort of a paradigmatic example for the study of turbulence. It's of course that it, in one hand, it's the simplest mechanism of hydrodynamic instability, and in addition to homogeneity in the horizontal directions, it has also the ability of isotropy in the horizontal direction, but we will not use this property. We will see that it provides us as much information because since the temperature is one of the variables in this problem, we can easily visualize motions, and there are different ways, and of course the same applies in nature. We can see convection in the atmosphere visualized by clouds, or on the sun we see the variation, radiation, and so on. So that's why we have much more information in case of convection about turbulence than other turbulent systems. Yeah, for the experimentalist, of course, it's also in contrast to shear turbulence, it's not subject to advection out of the observational frame. Yeah, here just a few examples. I mean, this is a picture taken from my office in UCLA, where in the afternoon the cold air from the sea comes in and then gets warmed up over the heated land surface, and you see all the nice convection rolls, even with sort of dislocations in between. But this is a typical phenomenon of convection in the atmosphere, and there are different types of convection. For instance, this is the stratus cumulus cloud deck, where the convection is really limited to the cloud deck. It's cooled from above due to radiation, and you see then this rather well-defined wavelengths of rolls in this clouds. And here is from a satellite, you can obtain pictures of convection. Here, for instance, when the cold Arctic air comes over the still warm sea, say of the Hudson Bay, and then it's, the cold air gets warmed up, and the humid air from below mixes into this set up convection things. You have at first a very thin convection layer, as indicated by the tiny rolls here, but then as the air propagates, this convecting layer becomes larger, and in the end you have what the meteorologists like to call mesocale convection with closed cells. But it shows very nicely that there is a lot of structure in there. The alignment of these rolls, of course, has to do with the wind shear, which tends to align the convection rolls in the direction of the wind. But there are other structures which perhaps you can see in this another picture, which is sort of a close-up. The clouds here are aligned with cloud streets like pearls on a string, but when you look closely, you see that these clouds extended perpendicular to the direction of the cloud streets, and so the cells have this bimodal structure, as we call it, with smaller wavelengths characterizing the alignment or the appearance of clouds along the basic roll axis. So these are examples for structure, and we will come back to that later on, which I would call coherent structure of a basically turbulent system. Yeah, another important example for coherent structure and turbulence is, of course, our own Sun. This is perhaps the most turbulent system which is accessible to our observations. The Reynolds numbers here, I think, was already mentioned, is of the 10 to the 25 or even larger. And in this case, we actually have also magnetic field emerging here in a sunspot, and you see that the magnetic field interacts with the convection and causes this filamentary structure here of thin rolls aligned with the direction of the horizontal component of the magnetic field. And the size of the typical structure which you see here, the granulation, is about 2,000 kilometers in diameter, and but you clearly see that there is sort of this typical wavelength, the typical size of this this granulation, which dominates in this picture. There, on the Sun, we have the interesting feature of supergranulation, and here we see a picture of the whole Sun, and the supergranulation has a property that its horizontal motion is quite a bit stronger than the vertical motion, and for this reason you see the structure best in the inclination, when you because you see the difference between velocities coming in to your line of sight and going away in your line of sight through the Doppler effect, and that's how this picture is visualized through the Doppler effect. the red is receding, the blue is coming in, and because main horizontal motions, you do see not much in the middle of the sun. You don't can't visualize the convection there, the supergranulations there. So the supergranulation now has a size which is at least 10 times larger than the granulation, so it's about 40,000 kilometers is the typical wavelength of supergranulation. There's even speculated that there's more, even larger kind of convection, so-called giant cells, inside the convection zone, but you don't see much evidence for it from the outside, so that why I don't have a picture of it. But the main point here is to emphasize the existence of coherent structure in highly turbulent systems. Now, we will see that there are actually two ways to the transition to turbulence. Namely, usually you just start with some random initial conditions, and as you increase, say, your control parameter, it becomes increasingly turbulent flow, and in the end, fully developed turbulence, you may find there are spontaneous coherent structures. But what you also can do is to use controlled initial conditions where you can then follow a bifurcation sequence of spatially periodic, which possibly are unstable, solutions of the Navier-Stokes equations. And this solution, I think, are of particular interest because they may embody the characteristic properties of the coherent structures. So when we start now our bifurcation sequence analysis, I want to refer to the primary solution as the basic state, which has all this, which reflects all the symmetries of the external conditions. So it will be homogeneous in two dimensions and in time. And from this basic state, you get as the first bifurcation, sort of as the first instability, the secondary solutions, which generically assume the form of holes or stripes. And convection is perhaps an exception that sometimes you may get hexagons. That has to do with the property that it's also isotropic in the horizontal direction, but that's an exceptional property which we will not make use of. And so except for that, you always get holes or stripes. And this is sort of a bit boring because it doesn't tell you much about the physics of the problem when you see only holes or stripes. This situation becomes more interesting when you go to higher bifurcation, look at the instability of those holes or stripes, and go to tertiary or quaternary or even higher order solutions, which then exhibit a large variety of patterns depending on the physics and the parameters of the system. So that will be of interest to us. Now, I don't really have to remind you of the various systems which we have already heard here, like Taylor coef systems, Rayleigh-Bernard, or inclined convection layer, where you have the experience to go through this bifurcation from the basic state to the secondary Taylor vortices, and then to, depending on the parameter regime, on various higher bifurcations. And here in convection, we will particularly emphasize bimodal convection and not convection. And so oscillatory varieties of those. And here I will not talk about inclined convection, but there you can see similar bifurcation sequences. I mean, even in shear flows, we can have visualize this bifurcating solutions. I mean, here I'm showing some results obtained by Hoff with Mongers some years ago. These are patterns which also have been obtained from the theoretical analysis of Feist and Eckhart. And also these are not really fully stable solutions. They are transient solutions which can be obtained and can tell us about some typical coherent structures perhaps. Or maybe we can go on from this type of solutions to higher bifurcations to enter those structures which then maybe also visible in the turbulent cases. Yeah, I don't have to explain you the Rayleigh number as the ratio between energy gain and dissipation in thermal convection, but I want to also emphasize that there is a Prandtl number, which is the ratio of the two diffusivities which play a role in convection, and especially at the higher bifurcation, this is a very important parameter. Yeah, now this kind of analysis, which I claim is generally applicable, requires that we have homogeneous condition in two spatial dimensions and in time, and one direction is inhomogeneous. This is always the set direction because we are looking at transport processes, so we need one preferred direction, but otherwise the geometry is quite free. We can use it, look at cylindrical system or spherical shells, and whenever we have these two homogeneous directions, this type of analysis is applicable, and the equations, namely the Navier-Stokes equation and the heat equation and whatever we have, can usually be written in such a form where you have cylinder terms with a control parameter like the Reynolds number or the Rayleigh number given by R, and then nonlinear terms and time dimensions on the right hand side. And when you look at the linear problem where you drop this term, then you get general solutions of this form where the wave vector Q is in the homogeneous direction, and where you look for the growth rates, and we often this growth rate of course will have an imaginary part, but we will limit ourselves here to the case when the imaginary part is zero, so that we have so-called exchange of stability. But if this should be different from zero, the analysis can be carried through the same way as I present them here, only with a bit more complex notation. Now, once you have determined the lowest value of R, where this growth rate, this zero real part exists, then you can actually turn your coordinate system so that the y coordinate is oriented in the direction of the preferred wave vector Q, and write your solution now in this form, and include all the higher harmonics which will not be generated through these nonlinear terms in here, and usually it is good to use a system of functions as, which satisfies automatic or boundary conditions. So that's a Galerkin type approach, and if you have symmetries in the z direction, you can even employ these function systems of this form, which utilize the symmetry about the midplane. But these are details, and there are other ways to do this same thing. Now, we have five symmetry properties. There are three symmetry properties which define roles, namely the translation in time, the translation in the longitudinal direction, and the traverse periodicity, but when you have additional symmetry in Z, which one of has a Banach convection, or the Taylor vortex case when you have a small gap limit, then you have this transverse reflection and inversion about the roll axis, so you have more symmetries. The symmetries are very important because when you go now to higher control parameters and look for bifurcations, you can identify bifurcations only through the breaking of symmetries, and that's why we like to have as many symmetries as possible so that we can go to many higher bifurcations. So what we do is to superimpose on these whole solutions arbitrary infinitesimal disturbances, which can be written in this form. This is the Floki ansatz, which consists of a part which has the same periodicity as a whole periodicity, but then has the Floki exponents here, and this generally depends on x and y. And of course, there's also the growth rate sigma again. Now, here's a sort of a table of various instabilities. They have been mostly investigated in the case of convection, but they apply to other systems as well. For instance, in the presence of poor swirl flow, you have the wavy instability, and the crosses indicated the symmetries which are broken, and here are all the symmetries which define roles, and here you have additional symmetries once you have some symmetries in the vertical direction. And I will later talk about mainly the cross-roll instability and the knot instabilities, but there are also block instabilities, and there's important oscillatory instabilities, which comes in at low Prandtl numbers. And the wavy instabilities, for instance, the presence of quad flow can be is the same as what we have called zigzag instability, and so on. So these instabilities are well known from many systems. And in the case of convection, we can now show this instabilities of the roles as a function of the Rayleigh number plotted here. Down here is the critical Rayleigh number of 1807. And here, in this direction, you have the wave number, and the onset of convection, of course, occurs for the wave number 3.117. And in this direction, we have the Prandtl number, so here's the high Prandtl number limit, and then things get more complicated at Prandtl numbers of the order 1. And at very low Prandtl number, we have this oscillatory instability, which sort of limits the range of convection roles very severely, and we will now talk about the cross-roll instability, which is bounds convection roles in this way, and the knot instability is the instability which is, has been shaded green here. I mean, there are other instabilities like the skewed varicose instabilities which do not lead to new patterns but just shift the wavelengths of holes, and are not so much of interest to us because they will not be visible as coherent structures in turbulent realizations. Here's a picture from an experiment of Dierdorf and Willis, where convection is visualized with some aluminum particles, I think, small particles. And you see at lower Rayleigh number, you can realize nice convection holes. When you go above a Rayleigh number of about 20,000, you see bimodal cells coming in and giving rise to this sort of streamlines, this S-type streamlines, characteristic for bimodal convection. By the way, please interrupt me when there's questions. I A small enough audience to do this here. Yeah, this bimodal convection, it really is stimulated by the instability of the boundary layers, and it superimposes a whole structure which is also actually symmetric about the midplane of the layer on top of the basic rolls in this form, but which gains its energy from the boundary layer, so it's much stronger near the boundary than everywhere else. And this instability can be understood through simple analysis. We know that when we have convection, it's very effective in transporting heat in the interior of the layer. But at the boundary, the heat still has to be transported by conduction, and that's why you get rather steep gradients here. And since velocity also decreases near the boundary, especially if you have rigid boundaries, no slip boundaries, you can now look at this layer as a convection layer by itself. And this layer has now, by a factor delta, smaller depths. The d is the depth of the entire layer, and only half of the temperature, of course, decreases over this layer. So our Rayleigh number now for this boundary layer is of this form, where r is the original Rayleigh number. So it's you have the delta to the third power, multiplying it in the factor 1/2 here. And if this is greater than some critical value, which we know will be of the order 1,000, then we expect instability. It's just sort of the same criterion as the basic criterion for Rayleigh, onset of Rayleigh-Benard convection. Now, this delta can be replaced by the heat transport, because we know this is a conductive heat transport along here. And so the heat transport is r half divided by delta in dimensionless units, or delta is equal to r over 2h. Using this, we plug this in here, and then we can derive this criterion, or rewrite this criterion in terms of h, and get this value. It's convenient to now express this in terms of h. We multiply this by h to the third power and take the 1/3 root. Then we get this criterion for instability. That means if the heat transport is less than r to the 4/3, that means it's less than the Nusselt number is less than r to the 1/3, then we expect this boundary layer to be unstable. And this is now indeed the case, because the heat transport for convection rolls increases only like the 6/5 power of r, and therefore this criterion will be soon violated, and that's why this bimodal convection will set in. It will set in high Prandtl number fluids, because at low Prandtl number fluids there are already other instabilities which precede it, and especially oscillatory instability, and so it's why this bimodal convection is typical for high Prandtl number fluids. Yeah, here is an example, another visualization of bimodal convection done with the shadowgraph method. The shadowgraph method, of course, has a parallel beam of light going through this layer, and wherever you have cold fluid, there the index of refraction is higher than the average, and you get a bright spot on the screen, while the rising hot fluid has an index of refraction less than average and gets a sort of a black stripe. And as the Rayleigh number goes up, you see how this bimodal convection then can be visualized, and the whole thing can be reversed. There's no hysteresis in this problem, and you come back to your original state. Yeah, I should emphasize, I mean, the original experiments which have been done in conjunction with Jack Whitehead, use a rather large layer where the hot boundary here was given by hot water flowing through here between two glass plates, and the cooling was obtained by again two cold water flowing through cold to between two glass plates. The glass plates were necessary to use the shadow graph method, so that if this nearly parallel beam of light goes through here, you can indeed visualize hot spots by by like a diverging lens here, which gives a dark point of the on the screen, while the downgoing cold fluids acts like a convex lens and gives a bright spot on the screen. So that's the observational technique. But more important here is that we can induce controlled initial conditions by putting a screen grid on top of the convection layer before the experiment is started, and put on a heating lamp. We just remove the mirror and put into the fluid here stripes of hotter and cooler air corresponding to the wavelengths of the convection rolls which we want to generate. And once we have generated them and raised the Rayleigh number, of course this heat lamp then is shut off, we will get controlled initial conditions for the rolls, which, as we have seen in the last slide. So that's the way of using controlled initial conditions for generating convection. Yeah, here is another example of bimodal cells. Here you see the clouds in a cloud street, where you have now this bimodal cells. So that's example of the coherent structures which we have already seen on the laboratory scale at much lower Rayleigh numbers than are realized in this atmospheric conditions. You may ask now, why do we see in air this bimodal cells, when I just told you that bimodal cells are obtained only at high Prandtl numbers. Prandtl number of air is of course 0.7, and the answer is that what you see here is not just air, but air mixed with condensed water. There's water vapor, and as it condenses, it liberates latent heat. And this latent heat has the effect of increasing the Prandtl number a lot, because the thermal diffusivity is decreasing because of the latent heat liberated. It any temperature perturbation cannot propagate very quickly into the system, and that's why this latent heat effect leads to high Prandtl numbers. So whenever you have clouds involved with convection in the atmosphere, you have a high Prandtl number system. Yeah, other instabilities which I will briefly mention later is the oscillatory instabilities, where oscillation propagate along the axis of the rolls, and then there's also the skewed varicose instability, but this does not lead to new coherent structures. It rather just changes the typical wavelengths of convection. Now, there's still another instability which is similar to cross-roll instability but has much larger wavelengths, and this is what we called knot instability, and this is again something important in terms of coherent structures in convection, as we will see in a moment. To analyze all of this bifurcations, we have to go now to the tertiary type solutions. in general, through the instabilities or role experience the bifurcation into three-dimensional structures. In this particular case, I assume that the three-dimensional structures are still steady. And but if you have, for instance, traveling waves, then we still can use the same ansatz by replacing x coordinate by x minus ct. So also this oscillatory instabilities, that bifurcation can be described in this form. Yeah, there are various examples, bimodal convection, not convection, I've already mentioned. There's also traveling block convection. Wavy rolls or wavy vortices can be also described in this way. And once we have finite amplitude solutions given in terms of the coefficients A, L, M, N, we can still do the stability analysis with respect to arbitrary infinitesimal disturbances by superimposing these disturbances, which now have a part that has the same periodicity as our solutions. And the Floch-Rey parameter now is of this form, and we can then look under which conditions for B and D sigma gains a positive real part. And so if we then look for the minimizing values of B and D at a given solution with alpha x and alpha y given and the real number given, then we get the bifurcation, which may lead then to new structures. And these new structures often then are time dependent, of course, and so the analysis gets a bit more complicated, because instead of solving for algebraic equations for the coefficients A, L, M, N, we have now differential equations time for the coefficient A, L, M, N. And so the analysis it's then a bit more complicated. Fortunately, the typical values of B and D are often the preferred ones are often zero, so that simplifies the analysis. This is a work which has been done by some of my co-workers over many years at Bolton, and Richard Clever and others have helped in this respect. Yeah, we want to discuss some of these values, and I'm particularly like to emphasize the steady knot convection. At first, it doesn't change much of the convection rules. They become thicker in some places and thinner in other places. But as we increase the real number, we see that in the middle of the layer, we see very confined plumes going up and going down. And this plumes have the advantage that as they reach the bottom, they, and you can see this best here, where you look at the z derivative of the temperature, which actually indicates the transport of heat towards the boundary, then this, say, this cold plume here is a very confined, very strong feature, and it shows that with the momentum of the downgoing plume, the heat transport towards the lower boundary can be enhanced quite a bit. And this helps convection, because the main difficulty of convection is to gather the fluid from the boundary. Say it's a lower boundary where you have hot fluid, you have to pull it into the uprising plumes, and to get it off the boundary is not easy and requires more space, or it makes it more optimal if you have more space available for it. So that's why this kind of knot convection is more effective than roll convection. And this, at the same time, of course, makes it as a good candidate for coherent structures and turbulent convection. So that's why in turbulent convection you usually see plume convection rather than sheet convection, which is characteristic for rolls. Yeah, you can see similar effects in the velocity field, but I think this already characterizes now. And we can now look at the case. We know that there is a critical dependence on the Nusselt number, which goes like R to the 1/3, which is the dependence which just marginally keeps the boundary layer stable. And for convection rolls, this cannot be achieved. As I said, convection rolls have a Nusselt number which goes only like R to the 1/5. And the not convection, initially they don't do too much, but then at higher Rayleigh numbers they do indeed achieve this power law of R to the 1/3 for the Nusselt number. So that's why this transition from sheet-like convection to plume convection is a very important one to keep the heat transport at optimal values. Yeah, the same case can be made in bimodal convection. Here you have also transition from whole convection to the three-dimensional form of convection, and again I have drawn this curve relative to the Rayleigh number to the 1/3 power of the Nusselt number, and so we see this for different Prandtl numbers and see that bimodal convection does indeed confirm to the R to the Nusselt number R to the 1/3 power. Yeah, now this bimodal convection will still get unstable, and there are oscillatory modes which come in, and here we have, I mean, there are two types, the symmetric one and the asymmetric one. The symmetric one you don't see any that much. I mean, see that the isotherms, yeah, theta is given here, are sometimes more confined to the corners. Here they're stretched out along the whole boundary, and then they come back to the same picture after one period. And yes, similarly things you can see when you plot near the boundary. And so this are oscillations, and we will see that they really correspond to some blobs going around the basic convection star. Here's again the vertical cross section, and we show here one period of this oscillation at different stages along the roll axis. I mean, we are looking sort of the basic roll axis goes into the blackboard, and now this superimposed bimodal cells are oscillating, and at different axes they show the different patterns. But if we take the time average and look only at the deviation from the time average, we can see that there's sort of cold and hot blobs going around the cell, and this enhances also the heat transport. This is similar to an effect which was originally also considered by Lou Howard, and so it comes out of these calculations here as well. Yeah, there's still another instability where now these boundaries are waving back and forth. Bimodal boundaries are slipping in one direction in the lower part of the cell, and in another direction in the upper part of the cell. And so you see just half a period of this process, and here you see the same thing in the temperature pattern. So this is unlike the symmetric oscillatory instability, we have the spatial symmetry broken here as well, in addition to the time symmetry. Yeah, here are just some pictures. I mean, there's further instabilities as you go on, which bring in a transition to the not convection, which of course is, since you have already oscillations, this will be also of the oscillatory type. But this analysis has not been carried out in much detail, so I don't want to dwell on this. I just mentioned it, since in the experimental movie we will see some of these instabilities. And here's just a comparison between observations of oscillations and experiments, which fits fairly well with theoretically obtained values. Yeah, I want to stop now here and go to the movie. If you what time do I have for?
First say no.
No.
First have to say no.
And then you have to proceed.
Then it should restart.
Sure. Let's do it again.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, how do I move this over? Somebody has an idea how to move this?
The top bar.
Mm-hmm.
Grab it there.
Drag.
And now how to...
Fine, that's good.
Let's stop.
Play.
Yeah, I want to make the full screen. How do I do this?
I think it's not there anymore. No, it's there. Full screen.
View on the top.
Right. Go to view.
View.
That one clicking.
Full screen.
Interface.
Too many of
them.
Full screen interface. Okay. It's not much bigger now.
Yeah, also here is the convection layer now. It's still the homogeneous state, and now we just raised the temperature difference across above the critical Rayleigh number, and we see now convection coming in, visualized with the shadow graph method, and we see already there are sort of indications of the bimodal cells transition, and so, and at particular points, you see already oscillations which come in where the patterns, especially inhomogeneous. But as we go on, we see more and more of these oscillations.
So Rayleigh is increasing now.
Rayleigh number is increasing all the time, yeah. And now we also see a transition to a larger scale pattern. And we have called this sort of spoke centers, and these are sort of the centers where we know are the plumes going on. The picture should be really symmetric in white and black, but now we are out of focus with this temperature increase, and we later on have to replace the screen to a different place. But in this way, we see that sort of something which gets into from a laminar state into a chaotic state in a sort of rather irregular way, but still is, exhibits sort of the structures which we know from the system of controlled initial condition. So this is now controlled initial condition. We had started with steady bimodal cells, and now we see the symmetric oscillations going on, and as we increase the real number further, this new instability comes in with the larger wavelengths, which is the characteristic element of not convection. You see here new centers develop here and here and here, and this larger wavelength gathers all the convection elements into those plume structures, and the remaining, the oscillating parts are just convection streamers in the boundary layers, and yeah, you see that this is the Rayleigh number has been decreased again at the end, and we see that this large scale structure remains then even at lower Rayleigh numbers. Here's still another way, I mean, again, bimodal cells obtained with controlled initial conditions, which now start to oscillate, and then as the oscillation increases in amplitude, there is a new instabilities with a large wavelength characteristic of not convection, and aligning the convection into those centers, and we will see now in the next scene the asymmetric oscillatory instability of bimodal cells, which is occurring at somewhat lower Prandtl numbers. Here we have bimodal cells, which at first are steady, and they begin now to oscillate, and you see that these boundaries are sloshing back and forth. So in the vertical direction, if we had a vertical view, we would see them doing oscillation like this. And but again, as time goes on and Rayleigh number increases, we see a new instability coming in, collecting the cells into new centers, which will turn out plume centers going up and going down. You see here primarily the upgoing ones, because yeah, that always depends on how we are, far we are away from the experiment with our screen, and we will see the symmetry better later on. Now we go back to the original view with random initial conditions and see what happens as we increase the Rayleigh number further. The, here we still see these centers, and it's remarkable how permanently they stay at those spots. Even so around it, everything seems to be highly chaotic. yeah, also, okay. you see the symmetry in the white and in the black rising plumes. The white descending plume forms sort of a square structure, and so you see the same square structure in the rising black plume, as you see here, and this persists even with higher Rayleigh number, and is, I think, typical coherent structures. Everything you see here fluctuating is happening in the boundary layers. This is at the lower boundary, while the plume structures remain stationary and have this sort of square pattern. And similarly, you don't see this anymore. You see it in the white structure. In a moment, the screen is removed, and then we see symmetry again. Here is now the screen is placed at different distance, and you see here the right structures, and again this structure in the rising plumes. And yeah, I guess I have to stop here. I wanted actually to show some similar structures in air to demonstrate that as real number becomes high, the Prandtl number doesn't seem to play much of a role anymore. That's of course what we expect in turbulence, that the diffusive effects of turbulence equalize thermal and viscous dissipation, and so that
can you put the movies on the archive, on the wiki?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, let's do that. Mm-hmm.
If somebody helps me, I'm very bad.
Yeah, no, we have people that help.
Yeah.
Okay, but there are people that help, so we will help you. But thank you very much.
So you showed the structures at for large aspect ratio and relatively small Rayleigh number. So the different states, and I wonder whether the existence of different states was carried on to small aspect ratio and large Rayleigh number on what Günther was speaking. Would this be a possibility that that these different states are the origin of the different states we see at large Rayleigh number? Or would this be something which is...
Yeah, I doubt it a bit, because in the cylinder experiments, of course, the horizontal is not homogeneous. It's very much influenced by the sidewalls. And here, the structure, I mean, what we have shown here in the picture is only actually 1/9 of the whole convection layer which we're looking at. Only the inner third in each dimension is shown.
The conceptual idea that these low Rayleigh number states somehow carry on to some structure in the fully developed state. I mean, clearly they will be different than here. But would this be something totally different, or could it be that turbulence lives on these low-dimensional structures?
Yeah, I think, and I wanted to show a simulation that we had done at Rayleigh number to the 10 to the 7, and in air, where you are a much more turbulent state, and we still see the same sort of square structure there. So I think that is rather persistent coherent structure of the system.
Well, I mean, I was more thinking of 10 to the 14 or 10 to the 15.
I don't know.
Okay, I think to this we should close, because the seminar is starting possibly now, actually.
Yeah.
And so we have to run over. Thank you very much again.